This time of year, we're getting close to Hanukkah. It's already Kislev. One of the gzeiros that we're told that the Yevanim instituted against the Jewish people was that they would not be able to declare Rosh Chodesh. They wanted to undermine our calendar. And the truth is, the calendar of any people tells a lot more about the people than most people recognize. It really is the themes throughout the year. You can kind of get a feel of the people, the culture, what they believe in. You know, all our Yamim Tovim are based on that, and it really has to do with the yearly cycle. We're less attuned to agricultural needs nowadays, so we may not be as familiar with it, but our Yamim Tovim very strongly have to do with the time of year, whether it be a harvest or planting or whatever the time of year, in order to dedicate that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have Hakaras HaTov for everything He's doing for us, and really utilize the different seasons and times and things happening in this world. Everything has a time and a place, and therefore in every time of the year where things are changing to a different part of the year with different weather patterns and different growth. So it's important to harness that to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So they really wanted to break the essential culture of Klal Yisrael. If you look, the gzeiros that we find that they leveled at us really were trying to attack that, Rosh Chodesh being an obvious one in that regard. So that somewhat has to do with the time of year, as we're approaching Hanukkah in a couple weeks. Additionally, we know that the first real mitzvah that seems to be directed specifically to Bnei Yisrael is in this week's parasha. It's the mitzvah of Gid Hanoshe. And that being the case, we know Rashi starts Chumash off with saying, why did the Chumash start with Bereishis? It should have started with HaChodesh HaZalachem. It's a medrash that Rashi is quoting from Rabbi Yitzchak. And that is the first mitzvah, not the first one written in the Torah that's specific to Jewish people. Keep in mind, non-Jews are not, you know, prohibited from eating Gid Hanoshe. But it's the first mitzvah that was said to Moshe Rabbeinu to Klal Yisrael. And that does have importance. That's not necessarily going to be discussed now. But I guess dealing with the fact that we have first mitzvah, it's a very loose connection. You know, I figured it's possibly an interesting topic, possibly not. I don't want to get into the technical aspects of it too much, but definitely wanted to get into the calendar. The Rambam mentions in Hilchos Kiddush Chodesh in the first parak that our months are lunar months, but our years are solar years. And it's something that people don't really think about oftentimes, but the truth is, if you just take a moment, you know, it really resonates in that the year, the course of the year as a whole, it's not a definite, you know, finite or defined, I should say, solar year in every single year, but our calendar, the years have to conform to some degree to the seasons. And I think we've discussed in the past, there's an idea that Aviv, some element of spring, whatever that is defined as, that Pesach has to occur after that's already started. You can't have Pesach in the winter. I think we may have discussed that this past Pesach apparently was in violation according to some of the ways that the Rambam seems to set forth that what the definition of Aviv is. Nevertheless, regardless if there's was a violation, wasn't a violation, however you reconcile that, we see that the year has to be set essentially with the seasons. Seasons are a function of the sun. It has to do with how direct the rays of the sun are hitting Earth. It gets hotter, it gets colder, plants and animals react accordingly. And that is the year. Whereas the month has to do with the renewal of the moon on a monthly basis. And therefore the months are lunar months, the years are solar years. It's definitely been spoken about throughout the ages that it's trying to harness everything. The moon oftentimes shown to symbolize Klal Yisrael or the more spiritual aspects of the world. The sun has been referred to as representing the regular part of humanity, the more physicality or physical aspects of this world, I should say. And therefore, the synthesis of the two is what we're trying to achieve. And by keeping that balance, it's important for us to have that. And that's really what defines our calendar, which, as we said, really defines the culture of the people. It has to do with the yearly cycle, the monthly, you know, dealings. So it's a very important thing, that synthesis. And we see this week's parsha does deal with how Yaakov and Esav interact, the spiritual and the physical somehow interacting, trying to find when and how, if they can meet in any possible way. So perhaps it's appropriate in that regard also. So we know it's a lunar month and a solar year. What does that mean? Most of us are familiar with the idea that the basin used to convene, and witnesses would come to say whether or not they saw the crescent, the new moon, and they would be, you know, checked out in basin. And should they produce appropriate testimony, then basin would declare the month a new month. When it came to leap years, there weren't witnesses that would be used. Basin would make a decision, seemingly on a yearly basis. Maybe they would make projections for a few years out just to see what was going on. It had to do with the agricultural needs, and it had to do with the seasonal needs also, to make sure to keep the appropriate balance, as we've mentioned a few moments ago. So in this way, which most of us have been informed of, that the calendar worked in that fashion, we don't really see a set, rigid calendar. And it seems to be based very much that the basin doesn't even have a rigid set of procedures as how they'll determine things. It's really dependent. Did people see the month or did they not see the month? That is the Rambam's approach. The Baal HaMor takes that approach also. It is interesting to point out, we have Rabbeinu Hananel says, he's quoted by Rabbeinu Chaya, we have writings that indicate this is Rav Sadia Gaon's approach also, that there really was no basis for witnesses in Halacha. Basin did not care for witnesses one way or another. And really, Basin is to determine when the new month, or the new moon, I should say, will appear. They declare that day Rosh Chodesh. There does not need to be any observation of the moon whatsoever. And that's when Rosh Chodesh is. Theoretically, they could make a calendar, but they would convene on a monthly basis because they didn't have a set calendar. In both systems, there is a slight amount of leeway that Basin is authorized to push off, even if, in the system of the Rambam system, even if witnesses came, they could say, you know what, it's not going to work out. Certainly Yom Tovim may come out in inconvenient fashions. We'll discuss it a little bit later, perhaps. And therefore, we want to push it off for a day. And we'll disregard the witness's testimony. And in Rav Sadia or Rabbeinu Hananel's approach, it could be the basin said, we know the moon will be visible, but we don't care, and we're going to push it off anyway for a day. There's a discussion whether they could even say it is Rosh Chodesh, even if they know the moon can't be sighted whatsoever. It seems Rav Sadia and Rabbeinu Hananel are of that opinion with certainty. The Rambam seems to not be of the opinion that you can trick the Edom into testifying that they saw the moon when they didn't. Because remember, he needs Edom in order to declare Rosh Chodesh. He does not seem to be of that opinion, although he would admit there is such an opinion in the Gemara. So those are the two basic approaches, whether witnesses were necessary or not. It was not a set calendar. It just happened, so to speak, in whichever system that would occur. How do we reconcile? We have Mishnayos that discuss witnesses, even the ability to be Mechal Shabbos. So these questions are asked. And Rabbeinu Bechaya, quoting from Rabbeinu Hananel, says that was really just a show. It was almost like a sham. And really what happened, they never had these witnesses. At one point in time, there were groups that tried to disrupt our calendar. We know that from the Mishnayos themselves, that the Tzedukim, Baisusim, and the Kusim, three different groups, tried to disrupt our calendar. And therefore, at one point, one of the groups, I believe would be the Tzedukim, if I'm not mistaken, maybe the Bais Susan, but I think it's the Tzedukim. I believe these are the ones he may say is, are these. Just I'm slipping whether it's Bais Susan offhand. But either way, they said that it should be with witnesses, meaning the Tzedukim were arguing the Rambam's approach, which, keep in mind, is not the approach that Rabbi Ben Hanan says should be the appropriate one. And at that time, to counter that, they created the system to show the Tzedukim and say, our calculations are precise, and we'll prove it to you that we'll have witnesses, basically our team, will come out and they'll be able to point out exactly where the moon is. You'll see that we'll be quicker than you because we'll know where to look. You're looking because you don't have our calculations. We're not sharing them with the public. Our witnesses will tell them where to look, where the moon's going to be. They'll get it right every time, and you'll see that we're clearly more accurate than just going out and by chance observing the moon. That is how Rabbi Hanan records.
Essentially, what was the hector for Newton to come up with these, or Kepler to come up with these calculations?
What's the issue?
We're saying, well, for some reason, Bazin wasn't allowed to share these calculations.
Bazin didn't share the secrets of the calendar, it seems, because, and has happened historically, that's how we started, there have been other nations amongst whom we've lived that have tried to disrupt our calendar, seeing it as a Jewish identity, a nationality type thing. They wanted to preserve that. They felt if it would be disseminated to the masses, then perhaps the governments would become aware of what's going on. They would be able to somehow step in. But if they don't even know what we're doing, they won't know how to intervene. The Balamor Rabbeinu Zrachi Levi, he discusses that a little bit, and that's why it's called Soda Ibor. He says that is disputed, but that's his approach. So you know. That's why they kept it a secret. It's no secret nowadays how our calendar works.
Well, once Kepler developed his laws, we know exactly when the moon's going to be sighted. We can calculate it using Newton's laws.
We could, but we don't use it for a calendar. We haven't had to use it. You are correct. At the time that Chazal were dealing and living in, there was some knowledge. It's oftentimes cited that it's a tremendous proof that the Chachamim knew certain elements or all elements of science because they had the Molad, which is the monthly cycle. They had it down precisely to the average. But it doesn't. First of all, it doesn't prove anything because the original Gears in the Gemara probably didn't have it written out accurately. It just had a rough estimate. And you look at certain Rishonim, clearly didn't have what we currently have in the Gemara, which is more of a precise number. Rive and others didn't have that. Rav David Gans points that out. He lived in the 16th century. But even if they did have the, which it doesn't seem they did, even if they would have had the more accurate number, but the Greeks were aware of that. Ptolemy already had that written out. So it's they weren't at the time when these things were written down. At the time of the Mishnah, when that was recorded, Rabbi Gamliel is the one who's discussing it over there. It was known to the Greeks. Was it known to the masses? I don't think so. Was it accepted by all of the general scientists of the time? I don't believe so, but it also wasn't unheard of. It's not going to tell you one way or another. So if they don't know how we work our calendar, even if they did know when the moon would renew itself or whatever it is, they don't know the intricacies. They don't know when we're going to make a leap year. They don't know when we're going to do this. They don't know, so we keep it a secret. They didn't need to know. Nowadays, that we have a set calendar, so anybody could open up a tour or a Rambam and read the rules and figure it out. People get scared; they think it's very complex. It's really not. You just have to go step by step. It's not a very complex. There's complexity in it to have established it, but to understand how it works once it's already been established is not such a complex system. Or understanding of that. Going back, so that's how the original seasons worked, or Yom Tovim, etc. Then something happened, and at one point in time, they abandoned the original system. whichever one it was, and they favored a new calendar. How did that happen? So the traditional understanding is that in the year 358-359, that was the first year of the calendar, Hillel...
C.E. we're talking about.
Correct. Hillel, who was living in Eretz Yisrael, he is not Hillel the Tana, he is Hillel in Amora. He's of the same lineage of that Hillel who was several hundred years before him. He's a great-great-great-great-grandfather of his. But Hillel was the Nasi of the time. The Nasi had far less power, it seems, than he had in the times of the original Hillel. But this Hillel, who's, if we have anything of his in Shas, it's minimal, it's very unclear if even the Rav Hillel in Shas is him, he established the calendar. The Nasi seems to have been empowered to do this. This is the tradition that Rav Hai, that is recorded or attributed to Rav Hai, that Rav Hai said that this is what happened. Hillel set down the calendar. Why? Constantius II was persecuting the Jews. It was getting very difficult. And they weren't going to be able to uphold a calendar anymore in the sense of having witnesses or having a basin convene on a regular basis that was being disrupted too much. And therefore, it was important for them to establish a set calendar. Now, when I say calendar, it's not that they sent out from Yeshiva's Nasi every year, you got a calendar in the mail and you sent back your check. It wasn't like that. They had rules that you would just work it out, which essentially is what it is. You know, we print it out, per se, and say, this year, you know, you would use the rules. If the Molad falls out on such and such date, then you do this. If it's like this, you do that. And what happens is we have seven leap years every 19 years. It's a 19-year cycle, which, you know, of the leap years will repeat itself. Now, what exactly was going on? So the Ramban, the Sefer Eber is the first one really to mention this, just before the Ramban. The Ramban repeats this idea. The Rambam seems to have the same tradition. He doesn't mention Hillel by name, but he says it was in the time period. He says, until Abaye and Rava's time period, they did the original system. And afterwards, they did this. Well, Rava died in 352. And 359, just 7 years later, is what we're talking about. So it really fits exactly with the way the Rambam's setting it up. Both the Rambam and the Ramban say that it's important for smuchim to be around in order to declare Rosh Chodesh or to meddle with a calendar. So the Ramban says explicitly that Hillel saw that Constantius was going to abolish smicha. Smicha was an unbroken chain that a rabbi would give ordination to Talmud from Moshe down on, and having that ordination allowed one to be on a Sanhedrin or a lower Sanhedrin or a city's official court system. It allowed those judges to use corporal punishment, capital punishment, fine people in certain ways that is not allowed by non-smuchim and is not able to be done nowadays because we do not have smuchim. And another thing that the Ramban and Rambam both say is smuchim are necessary to declare Rosh Chodesh. Therefore, the Rambam writes, there's a halacha l'moshe Sinai that in the event, because of persecution, that the original system cannot be implemented, a calendar which can happen and effectively be used from that point on until it can revert back to the original is allowed to be instated. And they hold that Hillel did this because smicha was abolished. So that was it. You couldn't, deal with the calendar from that point. So based on that, the calendar in its entirety would have had to have been established by Hillel II, right? Hillel in the year 358-359. Because after that time, there weren't smuchim anymore to regulate it. So if you wanted to adjust the calendar, if it wasn't a perfect enough system to be used for centuries without error, then there would have been a major problem. Because there's nobody who's authorized to tweak the calendar. Now, there is a sefer called Al HaShminis. It was written by this person, Yaakov Lowinger. He wrote a lot on the calendar and different aspects of it. And he figured out, based on the lunar cycle and other nuances of the calendar. I'm not going to go into the details tonight. It's getting late and we don't want to fall asleep. But it looks like it's most precise in the mid-4th century. Meaning when there is a slight drift, our calendar isn't perfect. But it's very accurate to have a 19-year cycle. It's accurate enough that the drift is so minimal that by the time it will really have major ramifications, we're not even close to that now, being, you know, 1800 years since its implementation, or 1700 years since its implementation, I should say. So it's a long ways away anyway. It's the most perfect or good enough system, I should say, that's there. And if you look at when it really was 100% in tune with the actual lunar cycles, it's the mid-4th century, which is precisely when this tradition attributed to Rav Hai, saying that Hillel did this. And as remember, it's the Sefer Eber was just before the Ramban, then the Ramban is repeating what he said, saying that Rav Hai's writings indicate that Hillel did this. So it's a pretty decent proof, you know, that the Molad, at least, which is what he's focusing on, the Molad is the first moment when the moon will begin to grow, which is the basis of the calendar. So that seems to be what's going on. Now, that's the traditional understanding. Most people, because the Ramban addresses it directly, the Rambam addresses it directly, that's what's commonly known. There are two ways to find another approach that one could do, you know, could analyze, could uncover. Depending on one's personality and perspectives as to how to treat different proofs, some may find one more convincing and some may find the other more convincing. I'm not here to be machria one way or another, but anything we'll say now may or may not be what we'll call a kasha on the Rambam or Ramban's approach. It's something that, you know, is peculiar, that needs reconciliation. Now, one is we find some Rishonim that may have a difference of opinion with the Ramban and Rambam. Now, that doesn't really faze too many people. If we have machlokas, we have machlokas. It doesn't tell us either. It doesn't prove one way or another. We have a dispute. Only one of the two ways could have happened. So, there's an opinion brought by Rabbeinu Chananel in Pesachim, Daf Nun Ches, that he says there's a Mishnah that's discussing Karban Pesach, and he says, you see from this Mishnah that already from the times of the Mishnah, they had this rule, Lo Adu Rosh. Now, small technicalities of the calendar that we'll go into really quickly without really going in depth into them, and we're not going to go into why they are, just that they are, just to point a few things out. The Molad, which is the moment the moon grows, we take that for Rosh Hashanah, and whatever day the Molad is, should be Rosh Hashanah. It's not always, and we're going to start talking about that a little bit now. One reason why Rosh Hashanah would not be on the day of the Molad is because something that many people are familiar with, it's called Lo Adu Rosh. We don't want Rosh Hashanah on a Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday. The reason is, we don't want Yom Kippur on a Friday or on a Sunday, because the prices of vegetables will get ruined, people can't do business, and if somebody passes away right at that time, to have a two-day time period when they would not be able to do kfura, in those times was not good for the mace, and therefore they did not want Yom Kippur to fall out on either a Friday or a Sunday. This rule is found in Shas, and that's Lo Du Rosh. If you don't disallow Rosh Hashanah being on a Wednesday or a Friday, you can't have Yom Kippur on a Friday or a Sunday. That's just the way it works. Why can Rosh Hashanah not fall out on a Sunday? That's because Rosh Hashanah Rabbah will then fall out on Shabbos. That is disputed in the Gemara and Sukkah, whether or not that works, or that is part of something that we care about, so to speak, or we prohibit. The Gemara over there seems to say that Rosh Hashanah Rabbah can, in fact, fall out on Shabbos. Our current calendar does not allow Rosh Hashanah to fall on Shabbos. We don't say lo du Rosh, we say lo adu Rosh. Now the Gemara in Sukkah, as much as it does come out in the end that Hoshana Rabbah can fall out on Shabbos, is, interestingly enough, talking with Amoraim, who came before Abaye and Rava. So they're not in the calendar system. They're pre-calendar. They're talking about what things were like before the calendar was instituted. They're saying when the Beis Din was charged with either witnesses or doing it on their own, depending on the two approaches we said before, would the Beis Din sometimes manipulate it that Hoshana Rabbah would not fall out on Shabbos? There are two opinions, and the Gemara sides and says they would not allow it. Right? So it's not so crazy to say that that was when they kind of just did things on a month-to-month basis. They didn't want to, manipulate the calendar just for that reason alone. But if anyway we're instituting a new calendar, and we can incorporate into the calendar the shul, why not? Why not have Hoshana Rabbah not falling on Shabbos, therefore we don't have issues with the procedures for Hoshana Rabbah? And therefore, Hoshana Rabbah, if you assume, started in the calendar, so you'll find it. So Rabbi Elchanan says from the Gemara Pesachim, he says, this is a proof that Lo Adu Rosh was even in the times of prior to Chasimas HaTalmud, he says, prior to what sounds like Shas being written, which is after Abaye and Rava. And he says, and this is in direct conflict with those that assert differently, who is that Yeshua? Which Yeshua is telling me that even after Chasimas HaTalmud, Hoshana Rabbah could still fall out on Shabbos? Because whoever that is telling me that after Shas was written, after Abaye and Rava, that's after our calendar, somebody played around with the calendar. According to the Rambam and Ramban, that cannot happen. Now, Rabbi Elchanan was not of this opinion. He's bringing a proof against them. But he is citing somebody. If he's citing an unknown Rishon, or one of the Gaonim, then we're dealing with somebody who's a reputable source. We would treat it like any other Machlokas Rishonim. Rabbi Elchanan is bringing his proofs. Unfortunately, because we don't seem to know who this is, we can't see what he would respond. The way to say that it's not the case, you'd have to say, well, maybe he's not talking about a reputable source, maybe he's talking about Karoyim, who knows, somebody who was, trying to undermine our whole calendar. It doesn't seem likely. Or maybe Chasim HaTalmud, he means the Mishnah, because his proof does come from a Mishnah. He doesn't mean the Gemara. It's just an odd Lashon. There's another Rishon that seems to indicate that there was somebody, or there were people manipulating the calendar even after Shas was finished. Tosfos, the Erechin, tells us that he goes through the whole procedures of the calendar, and he says, that was back then, but now we do X, Y, Z. He's contrasting then and now. Now, once again, it's not a definitive proof. And I'll tell you why. He's contrasting what the Gemara is talking about and what he's talking about contemporary times. What Ketosis had in his times was what they had is what we do have. But he's contrasting the current calendar with what was during Shas. If you look in the sugya that he's coming from, they are pre-Abaye v'Rava Amoraim again. So is he contrasting pre-calendar versus post-calendar? Possibly. The language used seems to indicate them versus us, meaning them being Shas and us being post-Shas. Neither are definitive proofs. The one from Ben Chanel, I think, has a little more weight to it. But either way, it's not 100%. Let's go through now some other things which some people may see as proofs and some people may not. And that's very simply the historical record. There are three other reasons why we push off Rosh Hashanah from being on the day that the Molad falls. And they all have to do with calculations in the calendar. And without getting into them, it's not because Rosh Hashanah will fall out on the wrong day. It's simply if the molon falls out too late during the day, so things don't look right, or, you know, something of that nature. So, let me back up a second. If you would have years, alternating months, 30-29, 30-29, 30-29, just like that, and you would not try to manipulate the calendar. You would have our seven out of every 19 years, you have leap years, and you just alternate the months, you will have the exact same accuracy of our calendar. You do not need the intricacies of our calendar to get the accuracy. The reason our calendar is so intricate is because we wanted to accommodate things like Lo Adu Rosh and these other three times we push it off, something called Molad Zaken, something called Get Raid, something called Batu Takpat. Because we wanted to manipulate the calendar, once we affected the accuracy, so we needed to then change it back. We needed to recalculate it.
Also, change the day, I mean, we just make the thing more exciting. I mean, everything, but based off of coming the same day of the week every day.
No. There would be 354 days every year, and 384 in a leap year.
It wouldn't automatically line up?
No, it's only going to line up if it's divisible by 7 every year. Your numbers have to be divisible. That's not going to happen. You're just going to have, Nisan is always 30 days, you know, year will always be 29. Our calendar essentially is 30-29, 30-29, 30-29, 30-29. Except for Cheshvan and Kislev. Why do we manipulate Cheshvan and Kislev? Because we want to push off Rosh Hashanah every so often next year because we have one of these issues. This year, why did we have a 30 Cheshvan? Because if we didn't, the next year Rosh Hashanah would have fallen out on Wednesday. Lo Adu Rosh, so we push it off. We had a 30th of Cheshvan a week and a half ago, whenever it was, in order that next year, Rosh Hashanah cannot fall out on Wednesday, it will fall out on Thursday. That's why we did it. Now, even with Lo Adu Rosh, you still would have had enough accuracy, because the calendar would correct itself. I'll play with Cheshvan and Kislev. The calendar will correct itself, because as long as we're just not hitting on one of those days, the following year, it'll just compensate. The problem is, once you put in the other Dechia, something called Molad Zaken, you sometimes can have 2 days back to back. I can have, let's say, this thing called Molad Zaken, which means the Molad falls out after midday. So if I have the Molad falling out after midday on a Tuesday, that means I'm going to push off till Wednesday, Rosh Hashanah. But I can't do Wednesday, so I'm going to push it off till Thursday. Once I'm pushing things by 2 days, now I've created a problem, because the next year is not going to be able to compensate. Those other two Dechiyas come in right back, and they offset that. Those other two are to keep on adjusting the calendar in order to maintain accuracy. So because we manipulated the calendar, we had to make it more intricate in order to maintain accuracy. If we would have left it alone, there wouldn't have been an issue. Now, the only one we see in Shas is Lo Adu Rosh. Even Lo Adu Rosh, we're not sure if we see the Aleph part of Lo Adu Rosh. The other ones, Molad Zaken, there are Rishonim who try to read it into a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. It's the standard. If you open up an art school Gemara, they'll tell you that's the Pshat in the Gemara. But it's not the Pasha Pshat in the Gemara if you just read the simple Pshat in the Gemara. And Rabbeinu Zerachi Alevi, the first one to really go through the intricacies of it, Rabbeinu Hananel alludes to it, but he's the first one to go through the intricacies, writes, nobody else is getting Pshat in the Sugi, let me tell you. So that means that all the other Rishon did not read his Pshat in the Gemara. They read in the other way to read the Sukkah. We don't have any of these things. And certainly the other two Dechiyos aren't in the Gemara. Is that problematic? Not necessarily. The Gemara doesn't have to discuss our calendar. It could have been something that was never committed to writing until post-Shas, like the Rambam and other Svarim. But at the same time, you know, the fact that it's not there is at least peculiar. So, the problem is that we have records from Gaonim and others between the time of Shas and when we know with certainty that the calendar was 100% completed. We know, for example, Rav Shrira Gaon, he has a famous Igeres Rav Shrira Gaon, which is a fascinating work. He discusses what is Shas, why is it authoritative, why do we have to listen to it, what's going on here, essentially. And in it, he also details a historical account of many of the Tanaim and Amoraim from one generation to the next. This is his thing. It's obviously written in Rav Shmuel and Rav Hai were father son, you know, going it, you know, they're both also early. So he committed that to writing. It was originally a tshuva to the people of Kerouan, and it's commonly found. It's not a difficult sefer to find. It's a pretty small sefer. In it, one of the dates that he records is somebody named Rav Achoy ben Rav Huna died in the year 506 on the 4th of Adar, which was a Sunday. But the 4th of Adar cannot be on a Sunday based on our current calendar. The rule that we have, that we've talked about, of Hoshana Rabba not falling out on Shabbos, would have been violated had they had a 4th of Adar on a Sunday. So it's a rule that we saw Shas didn't seem committed to. We said Shas isn't definitive what was in our calendar because the Tzugin Shas was pre-calendar. At the same point in time, we now have something post-Shas indicating that date did occur. Additionally, if you just go back to the way the Molad would have been that year, it was a violation of that other thing we're calling Molad Zaken. So it seems that Molad Zaken was not implemented that year. We also have somewhat compelling, they used to have a Reish Galusa. He was appointed by the government, he was authorized by the government. He was a very powerful person in Bavel. And in the year 836, the Reish Galusa wrote a letter to the people of Eretz Yisrael, and he was discussing with them the needs of the calendar. And it's very clear there was no concept of Molad Zaken when he's discussing it, because he, when discussing the dates, is clearly in violation of Molad Zaken again. So we have two. Once we have that Hoshana Rabbah falling on Shabbos seems to have happened post-Shas, and two times we have indicated that Molad Zaken was violated. So that's very peculiar. It sounds like it was not there. When's the first we know with certainty that Molad Zaken existed? Now keep in mind, once you have Molad Zaken, you have to have the other dechias to keep the accuracy, so they're going to come as a package deal. When is the first time that we find it? Fascinating case. In the year 921, Rav Sadia Gaon was studying in Syria. He was not yet the Gaon of Sura. Sura was falling apart a little bit, did not have a Rosh Hashiva. I think it was Mark Cohen Tzedek was the Rosh Hashiva in Pumbedisa, and the Reish Galusa at the time was somebody named Dov Ben Zakkai. And Rav Aaron Ben Meir, who was the Nasi at the time in Eretz Yisrael, as was the procedures of those times, announced what the Yom Tovim for the following year would be. He did on Hoshana Rabbah. That was the standard thing. Everybody would come together. Okay, next year, here's all the Yom Tovim. And he said something that incorporated Molad Zaken, but not exactly as we have it. It was a different version of it. Well, in Bavel, they did not appreciate this. Rav Sadia Gaon, Ben Rav Sadia, got wind of this and penned a really fantastic explanation of the calendar describing why he felt Rav Aaron Ben Meir was wrong. It was a massive machlokas. Both seemed to indicate that Molad Zaken was an old rule by that point in time. Now, what happened? Those that followed, Rav Sadia Gaon ended up becoming the Rosh Hashiva of Sura because of this. This is why he became a Gaon. Gaon being the Rosh Hashiva of Sura. He's the first Egyptian to hold that position, which was a big tumult at the time. They were only taking people from Bavel up until that time. So in that year, all of a sudden, we have a split. All the communities that followed Bavel, or the Gaonim of Bavel, followed Rav Sadia Gaon and had their Yom Tovim in accordance with his opinion, which was most of Bavel. A few communities in Bavel and all those in Eretz Yisrael, for the most part, followed Rav Aaron Ben Meir's opinion, and for the next 2 years, they were observing different Yom Tovim, but they were off by a couple days. when Pesach would start, when Rosh Hashanah would start. It was totally different Torahs almost. It's pretty fantastic. So we know it was there at the time because they're arguing over how to apply it. But how old could it have been? Because in 836 we see it still wasn't being used. Because of all this historical record, it's assumed by many that sometime in the mid-9th century, something happened. There are theories, I have my own, we're not going to go into that tonight, but something happened and they decided to adjust the calendar. So, if that's true, the historical record is supporting what we suggested with Rabbeinu Hananel and Tosos, that even after the time of Shas, they were still playing around with the calendar. They may not have been able to have had the formal system of Edim coming every month or the basin declaring it every month. They had a calendar, but at the same time, it was able to be adjusted by whatever was considered to be the authoritative body of Klal Yisrael at the time. Which we see in the year 921, there was a dispute as to who was the authoritative body. We ended up following Rav Sadia's opinion, is how that settled out. Now, one kasha that one can have on this, it's a kasha, there's a sefer, I guess I'll call it. It was written in, we believe, 824 or 825. It was written by a fellow, Muhammad ibn Musa al-Khwarizmi. He was not Jewish, as you probably have figured out. You may have heard his name before. He created algebra. So he's the father of algebra. He is a leading scientist of the time. And of his many interests, one of them was the Jewish calendar. And he wrote a fascinating piece about the Jewish calendar. And it goes through all of its intricacies. Now, this is in 824. It even predates that letter of the Reish Galusa that we talked about, which was in 836. In his work, which was published by Dr. Tzvi Langerman from Bar-Ilan University. It's in the Asufot. It's in Hebrew. In that publication, it has a very detailed work of our calendar, including Molad Zaken and all these rules. So now, that supports more of the Rambam and Ramban. At the same point in time, we have other historical evidence going against it. How do you address it? I'm not saying we have answers tonight for everything. However, I will say that there's Rachamim Sar Shalom is another notable scholar who's written on these topics. He feels very strongly, and it does look, I'm not an expert in these matters, but it does look like the text of Al-Khwarizmi's work has been significantly altered over time. It's very disjointed. It's going and discussing a whole topic, and all of a sudden it breaks in the middle without a real segue and starts discussing all these intricacies, including Molad Zaken. And then when all these intricacies are over, all of a sudden it breaks and goes back almost to the original topic. And it looks like a student later on, maybe not trying to pass it off as Al-Khwarizmi's work, he was just putting in his notes. We have it all the time. Talmud Torah, he's not Torah here, he was saying real things. Somebody at a later point in time was updating the work to reflect what the Jewish calendar was at that point in time holding of. And therefore, because we can't tell where the stop and where the start is, but it looks like something's a little weird over there, and therefore it's difficult to really use that as a proof. What about the proof we mentioned in the beginning, that Yaakov Lowinger mentioned, that the moon cycles seem to be very consistent with Hillel? So it seems there was something from the times of Hillel. Keep in mind, by the time of Rav Sadia and even Reish Galusa, all these people, they didn't have a basin convening every month. They were using rules, so it seems that Hillel, according to this other opinion, instituted the basic calendar. He instituted a calendar, like we said in the beginning, which is very little manipulation. It may have had low adu rosh, it may have just had low du rosh. And it just went. It didn't have this other molad zaken, but we didn't try to accommodate all these other things, which created inaccuracy, which we then had to put in other rules to maintain the accuracy. And he may have started it like that. for whatever reason, sometime between 506 and the current date, they decided to disallow Hoshana Rabbah's observance on Shabbos. And for whatever reason, sometime between 836 and 921, they decided to disallow, or not disallow, they decided to institute the Molad Zaken rule and all the associated, you know, other rules to get the calendar back to accuracy. So, it's going to work out. Hillel instituted the calendar. That's why we have a tradition like that. But it was able to still be manipulated. Now, what it comes down to is, can non-smuchim regulate the calendar? If you hold yes, and there's nothing wrong with saying what we said tonight. If you hold no, like the Rambam and Ramban, then you have a problem in that after Hillel, nobody should be able to manipulate the calendar. It's over. It's a closed book. The work is over, and that's it. So, you know, I'm not saying what happened with certainty. One of the two possibilities, or possibly a third possibility that we're not even thinking of tonight, who knows, but it seems to me one of these two possibilities happened. The historical record indicates it's more probable the latter, although the only Rishonim that we have talking explicitly about it seem to have in their writings the former, in that it was fully instituted by Hillel. Who knows? I don't know what the Nafkamina would be now. This Klal Yisrael has, as a whole, accepted the calendar. Whether it was with Smuchim or not with Smuchim, I don't know. But that's the Jewish convention has mandated that that's what we use. And Mirza Shem, the next time it'll change, will be because we have a Sanhedrin, and they'll go back to the original system, whatever that was, Machlokas for Sadjikon and the Rambam. So, it's somewhat of an academic exercise, but I think it is a little eye-opening. Just to recap, the few eye-opening parts is there is a dispute whether witnesses were part of the process originally. I think most people find that a little eye-opening. And the other thing that's eye-opening is there's historical evidence and even evidence from Rishonim that indicates that it wasn't as clear-cut of a picture that in the year 359, all of a sudden we just had this institution of the calendar. It was a process that developed over time from the mid-4th century, and we know it was finished 921, that's the last we see that anything was still open-ended. By 921, by the time Rav Saja and Rav Aaron ben Meir had their machlokas, that was the final, you know, solidification of the calendar. There are many theories as to what was going on at different points in time and why different things were implemented. Not as much as to why Hoshana Rabbah would have been back and forth on Shabbos or not on Shabbos. I will point out, Hoshana Rabbah essentially became a yontif in the times of the Gaonim. It started to take significant, or a lot of significance, I should say. It does not seem to have had that much significance in the times of Shas. For whatever reason, and one can, you know, theorize why, Hoshana Rabbah started to become more of a observed yontif during that time. And Molad Zaken, so there are many opinions. I've seen some that discuss it was in order to dispute the Karaim. I have a personal opinion also that